Here we go. There's a wooden wagon we use to spread news and opinion, which we know as News Muir. It's a combination of news and opinion known as News Muir, like manure. Used to be the Tom would be in the wagon, and there'd be somebody like a celebrity sitting next to him holding on to the teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar. But as it turns out, after Tom was absent for like about 6 or 7 months, the wagon, who knew, was self-driving. Tom, for all those years, you were faking it.
No. I knew exactly what I was doing. I was just keeping it a secret.
Ah, I see. Well, now the wagon goes by itself with various celebrities sitting holding the teeny tiny lady.
This whole country just like my flock of sheep.
Yeah. Understand?
Rednecks, crackers, hillbillies, house prowls, shut-ins, pea pickers.
Right.
Everybody that's got to jump when somebody else blows the whistle.
Okay.
They're mine. I own them. They think like I do.
Is he talking about our audience? Got in and house frowls.
Is that there, Andy Griffith?
That's Andy Griffith facing the crowd. I think he won an Academy Award for that, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, and I think it's a Vinny. Remember Vinny? New York
yeah.
Vinny?
Yeah.
That was his favorite movie.
It is a bizarre film. He plays a radio host who is, you know, to the public, Lonesome Roads, gets sort of a down home kind of guy, just,
yeah.
you know, talk. But then one of the guys decides he's going to screw him, leaves his microphone up. So then you hear him tell everybody, what a bunch of idiots people are. They're a bunch of seals. And yeah.
But yeah, no, but he becomes so popular as a radio host that he decides to go into politics. And that's when he gets screwed. It's your life story.
Is that what it is, Tom? I'm just waiting to get screwed. Mike Leach and Michael Baumgartner. Tease football and to talk about war as well when it comes to how to be a leader and how to actually plan the battle on the football field is very similar to planning battles when it comes to countries defeating other countries.
That's right. This is supposedly a 5-week course that's going to be offered the back half of this semester at WSU. He's mm-hmm. obviously the WSU coach. And Bob Gartner is, well, at least was, I don't know if he's still in the state legislature, representative from Spokane.
Yeah.
And the two of them are going to teach a guerrilla warfare and football strategy.
Hmm.
And they say they see similar, strong similarities. For instance, the academic study of a military strategy, they say, they look at commanders who face long odds against overwhelming adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, how do you approach that when you are undermanned or you're overpowered by the enemy? How do you turn that disadvantage to your advantage? And then they compare whatever military strategies they can cite in history. They then apply that to the football field because they say the Washington State Cougars are often, in effect, undermanned. They don't have the best athletes on the field, but they need to figure out a way to beat the USC Trojans or the Washington Huskies and all. And so they say there are parallels in football strategy and military strategy when you are at a disadvantage. And they examine counterinsurgency tactics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not quite sure how it's going to be used on the football field. But ultimately, you get to break down game film with Leach, which would be fun because he's such an entertaining mm-hmm. guy. But the final requires students to come up with recommendations for U.S. policy in Yemen. And design 3 football plays for the Cougars when they play the Houston Cougars in the fall.
All right.
So it's just kind of a goofy mix. It's got 5,000 likes on Facebook. There still hasn't been any official confirmation from WSU that it's going to happen,
mm-hmm.
but it sounds like they've thought through this enough that it probably will since it's getting so much publicity. Kind of fun.
Yeah, University of Washington decides it wants to take some of your taxpayer dollars and build a new sports arena. Lounge so that you can go in there and play video games.
Yeah, it's Esports Arena and Gaming Lounge inside the Hub building, the Husky Union building. And the idea is that it's so popular that they are I don't know if the University of Washington actually does this. I know some universities do, started offering scholarships, but they're in the planning stages of doing things like that. They're going to allow for tournaments to happen on campus, but also you can just randomly show up. Even if you're not a student, if you pay $6.50 an hour or something, you get access to all of these virtual reality equipment and these video games and the like. So the idea here is that we are on top of it. We are the first and biggest public university to sort of venture into this esports arena, and it's a multi-million-dollar move, and multi-million-dollar business. So why not try to cash in and start offering scholarships like we do to tennis players and football players?
I see. I told you.
Does that appeal to you?
Well, yeah, it just bothers me that I saw a study in the Wall Street Journal. They're talking about free college, and they asked this guy how much of your tuition goes towards actually learning.
Yes,
20%. The other 80% goes towards additional expenses, which includes paying for the football field, paying for student union, paying for the movie theater, paying for the local bar, paying for all the other stuff that attracts people to want to go to college.
Ah.
A friend of mine recently, or graduated a couple years ago from University of Amsterdam, also went to a school in London, and she was explaining to me, she goes, you don't understand. You guys have all this sort of stuff. We don't have any of that. That's why it's so much cheaper to go to school in Europe, because there aren't football fields. We don't have swimming pools. We don't have workout facilities. We have none of that. We have a class with a desk and a teacher, because that's what you're going for. But the United States and our college here is like, hey, let's build as much junk as we possibly can so that people can we're competing against the one school that's got a lazy river and the other school has got like zip lines because it really is. It's a giant kindergarten for the kids who's are paying $50,000 a year.
Yeah, that's interesting. If you think of them as getting an education in esports, which most of us don't, but I mean, an education in learning how to play football or become a professional baseball player by going to the University of Washington, you might say that it is a kind of vocational training, this esports.
Yeah, but
you think it's not. You just think it's basically allowing students to play video games.
Yes, video. Yeah. So one more thing. This is now. But
John, they call it esports. It's all esports.
It's not a sport. let's see. Theresa May ran into a little bit of trouble yesterday.
A little bit. They say it's of historic dimensions. They cannot remember the last time any sitting premier lost a vote of significance by such a crushing.
So June 2016, 70% or 71% of the folks in the UK voted, do you want to leave the EU or do you want to stay?
Mm-hmm.
It goes, leave. Let's go. We're out, right?
Yeah, not by a lot, but it did.
53-46 and then different. I think Scotland said, hey, we want to stay by 60-some percent.
Yeah.
But overall, the majority ruled,
yes,
let's get out of this. We don't want to be tied in with the EU.
Yes.
All right. So then she thought she had a program and a plan. It's called Article 50, which set a date, which I think is sometime this March, where the UK would simply go off onto its own and would trade as its own entity as opposed to being tied in with the other 28 nations.
The problem is that they say, we need to exit. That's why it's Brexit. Exiting. But they didn't agree on how they were going to exit. And so what she's been trying to do for the last year is come up with a plan, say, okay, we'll do this. Because some people still want to have ties to France. They want to allow the French people living in Britain and the British people living in France to still stay there under certain economic conditions. She tries to work out a compromise, and it got turned down 2-1 yesterday.
The ayes to the right, 202. Ooh. The noes to the left, 432.
Ouchie.
They thought she was going to lose, but they had no idea it was going to be by that much.
Labour leader says,
the result of tonight's vote is the greatest defeat for a government since the 1920s in this House. This is a catastrophic defeat for this government. I therefore, Mr. Speaker, inform you I have now tabled a motion of no confidence in this government. And I'm pleased that motion will be debated tomorrow, so this House can give its verdict on the sheer incompetence of this government and pass that motion of no confidence in the government.
So the Parliament's now running the UK.
So, well, I mean, the Parliament always runs the UK because there's the Queen and then there's the...
I understand.
You know, I mean, she's just the head of her party, Theresa May. The question now is she actually going to... is this going to pass? Is it going to be a vote of no confidence? It's happening today, as far as I understand. And the big question right now is there are two radical positions because for want of a better, just think of this as like the mainstream proposal just got voted down.
Mm-hmm.
Now the two extreme proposals are up. One is we will redo the referendum.
Uh-huh.
We're going to vote because the hunch is that right now people in Britain are thinking this is a mistake. They start looking at the economic consequences of pulling out, and so maybe it would win. But others are up in arms. We already did the vote. You can't re-vote. And so then the other option is if you don't do the re-vote, you do what they call hard Brexit, which just means they just leave.
Yeah.
And they've got no arrangements. And so then they're really cutting off all the ties, all the economic ties they have, and they say that is going to plunge the UK economy, you know, into a real downturn, if not a downward spiral.
Well, it's bad for us as well. The EU is our number one trading partner.
Yes.
Right. And what happens is if they, say a business, corporation went over and set up in, say, the UK,
because they wanted to be able to have access to the other markets,
the French,
right? Germany,
Belgium,
France, and everything else, right? Now, all of a sudden, you've set up your headquarters there. They have basically sawed off that branch, and now your corporation is just in the UK and cannot trade, cannot do business with the other partners. There's that. Plus, also, the UK pound will lose its buying power, making the American dollar more expensive, which then makes it harder for the folks in the UK to purchase American products, and it throws everything out of whack.
And the people, not the most up in arms, but Scotland is certainly unhappy with this, since they're part of the UK, and they voted overwhelmingly to stay in. They don't have that option. But Northern Ireland and Ireland, now there's no easy go between, and so the Northern Irish are saying, we want to keep the connection with Ireland, you know, much tighter than it was, and they say at this point a hard Brexit would make that impossible.
There's a trailer that you can watch. It's on Netflix. It's called Conversations with a Killer, and it's our own Ted Bundy talking.
He didn't look like anybody's notion of somebody who would tear apart young girls.
My name is Ted Bundy.
I've never spoken to anybody about this. But I am looking for an opportunity to tell the story as best I can.
A person of this type chooses a victim for a reason. Possession, control, violence.
There was something unique about Ted's brain. He talked in terms of a voice in his head, and this voice would start saying things about women.
He had very blue eyes. When he really got going, his eyes went absolutely black.
Murder leaving a person of this type hungry, unfulfilled, would also leave him with the obviously irrational belief that the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. And the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled. Or the next time he did it, he would be fulfilled.
The thing about Ted Bundy is there are lots and hours of tapes, I think, of him, and they've never been heard before. Unfortunately, I have an interest in this. This is something that intrigues me since I lived through that time. It's being launched, this series, on the 30th anniversary of his execution.
Mm-hmm.
But because he was from here, he had roots here, and Rule wrote the book that she, The Stranger Beside Me, about working with him. The suicide hotline of all things. It's fascinating to me. I think Ted Bundy is a fascinating person, but I am also a bit disturbed because in this they show all of his, you know, female victims, and it's like, boy, I don't know. I mean, he's becoming sort of legendary, Ted Bundy. And if that was one of my daughters, my wife, that he had killed, it's like, how dare you, you know, bring this up? And sort of, it's almost impossible not to glorify somebody when you devote an entire, I don't know, it's 10-part docuseries to this guy, even though he's long been dead, and he's of the worst serial killers.
I was at a dinner party, and someone brought up the fact that their friend was able to outsmart Ted Bundy.
Yes, I think you told me this.
And I'll tell you something, boy, nothing brings down a dinner party faster than someone talking about a serial killer.
Really?
And then the fact that the person was able to, it was over at Sammamish State Park.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a yellow Volkswagen, and he used to tell people, hey, can you help me?
Yeah, he put his arm in a sling or something.
And then he'd go to hit him. Yeah, and it's like, shit, the person went dark, and then there was just uncomfortable, and then somebody else started to bring up other famous serial killers. Whew. Oh, that's not a good topic.
It isn't?
No.
Because there is a fascination.
I know.
All these TV shows. And,
I know. I should have had you there. So.
To lighten the mood. Right.
By the way, Netflix has said we're going to go from charging you $11 to $13. So for the 7 people that actually have Netflix accounts, you're going to be paying more.
What are you talking about? 7 people?
No. 7 people pay. Everybody else just rides off of
that. Oh, I see, with a shared account. So I was going to say, I don't know anybody who doesn't use Netflix.
Me?
Is that right? Yeah, of course, you barely have a TV. Do you have a TV now?
No.
No, you still don't, yes. The thing about this is I think we are so used to the expenses of living in our time that, oh, I'm not, screw Netflix, 13 bucks, 11, maybe I can handle
that.
13. I'm not. Well, one of the reasons why Netflix is in trouble, or they're in need of more money, is because they are pouring billions into creating new content, like the Ted Bundy series. But they also have Roma, one of the best movies of the year, was a Netflix film, and they're pouring a lot of money into creating content. We'll see if this helps them.
All right, I've got 2 minutes to tell my bachelor story.
Okay, good. That's right. We've been waiting all day.
All right, so I've only been to one bachelor party. I've only been invited to three weddings. Two of them were my own. So I go to this one. And my friend, Tom Bernstein, he's the one throwing the party. Okay. I don't know the guy getting married.
Okay.
The woman walks in with a giant boombox. So this is like 1983. And it's kind of those boomboxes that get like 50 D-cell batteries to run the thing. She walks in, she presses play on it, and it begins to play Motley Crue. So that's playing. And she then puts a black mask over this guy's head. He has his eyes. You can't understand him because he has a thing coming out of where his mouth would be.
A thing, huh? Okay.
I only have 10 seconds. Oh, take it out for 1 second, please. So she then takes off her clothes.
Okay.
Large, buxom, African-American gal.
Okay.
And then proceeds to sort of get close to where the guy's mouth should be when this other thing is there. She takes her hand and grabs the hook of the mask.
Okay.
And she is sort of simulating. Well, the guy is like... And it was so uncomfortable because you could hear his head pounding, lifting it up, pounding. I thought, well, this couldn't get any worse. There's no way. This could... And all of a sudden, the batteries on the boombox start to go out.
Yeah.
So the music is going out. I just stood there. No one helped him.
Yeah, the guy died right there, right?
Right there.
Amazing.
No, he didn't die. But he wishes he was dead. Yeah. And then with that, the music finally stops, kind of gives up, and she gets up, and then somebody gives her $50, and that was it.
Wow.
Oh, my God. It was so uncomfortable. I thought, can't get any worse until the boombox batteries died. Wow, that was bad.
I'm surprised he didn't call off the wedding after
that.
Well,
he had asthma, so he was reaching in his pocket to get his little inhaler, which, where's he going to shoot that?
What are my options, John? Oh, my God.
That was bad. Yeah. You went to one.
Yes, but the thing is, we went to a strip club, and it was very uncomfortable because these women would come around, and I think sexual fantasies work better when you can just sort of, like, not treat them as people, but as soon as they come walk up to you, all I see is this woman, and I feel bad for her, and it's just like, oh.
Talking to her?
Mess. Yes. She wasn't interested in talking.
Is this kind of classic music? Is it that music?
Yeah. I don't know. It just made me extremely uncomfortable.
Could you smell the pina colada skin lube on her?
I just kept thinking, like, why are you here? You know, I don't know.
Have you thought about maybe another career?
No, I mean, I just felt bad for her.
Oh, you felt bad for her.
I did.
I'm not looking at you like that.
That was a mess.
Oh, that is terrible. That's the last one you went to?
That's the only one I've ever been to. It was cured. Even this I get to experience.
All right. That's right. You haven't been to one of those girly espresso stands, have you?
No. I mean, we did. Remember when I got my haircut up on Aurora, I actually walked by one, and I was stunned. We'd been doing stories in Cairo for years. I had no idea how little they do wear.
Little. Right back, Tom McCurley, Cairo Radio. Right to us. Tell us how you're feeling, everybody. The Online Trading Academy text line at 98973. Yeah, Tom and I back in the studio again. Long departure.
Yeah.
When I was gone for the 2 weeks, how long were you there?
Yeah, I was here. I had to take a couple of Mondays off for Epiphany dinner and the awards, but I was here for the 2 weeks, John.
I got it, Tom. Let's see you writing at the Online Trading Academy at 98973, texting. We certainly appreciate that. Come on in, everybody. Do we have a letter of the day yet, Jacob?
Yeah, right now. I mean, obviously, it's still an opportunity to take it over.
Flexibility.
But, yeah, but the current one is a response to the story you told last segment.
Ah! Regarding it's not from the 9-year-old ghost boy, is it?
No.
Okay. Let me just say real quick, if listening to the show, there's so many layers to the show.
Yeah.
That a lot of people are like, what's 9-year-old ghost boy? Real fast. Ready?
Okay.
30 seconds on this one, Andrew. 30 seconds and then make some sort of annoying buzz sound. but do it in an English accent. You ready?
Okay, ready and go.
I dated this girl, and she was a white witch. And one time I went over to have a date with her at her house, if you know what I mean by date. And she slept in a coffin, so we ended up having a date, if you know what I mean by date, in a coffin. There's a ghost that used to live at the house. It was a 9-year-old boy who fell off the horse and broke his neck. And when after we were finished dating, all of a sudden he appeared in the doorway, 9-year-old ghost. So now somebody writes to us all the time as the 9-year-old ghost boy whenever anything is mentioned about sex or coffins.
What do you mean, somebody? The ghost boy, the 9-year-old ghost boy
so
writes.
So that's where that comes from.
Yeah. All right.
What would you say?
That was it.
What was the sound you made?
It was oi. It was, oi. I started,
Okay. Why your second child isn't any easier. This is a story that's in Oxy, and it points out, and Tom, you and I both are blessed with two children.
Yes.
And they say that, you say, well, I've got the first one down, and if I have a second one, I've already sort of been through it before, I know the routine, so the second one will be easier.
That is sort of the old wives' tale is, yeah, second one will be a lot easier. I do think that I was a better parent to my second child than my first because we were much more relaxed, and you rely on your own experience, and so that's all to the good. But they said, in reality, the sociologist decided to look at this because she had been getting pressure to have a second child with all of this cultural suggestions that the kid needs a sibling and you're better off and it'll be a lot easier. And she says that based on her studies, it's not only not easier, it's harder. She says it's not double the work when you have two kids. It's like square the root. It's like four times as hard because when you have two kids, you have two demanding entities that are after two different things. You think, oh, well, good, they can go to bed at the same time. No, one may be, you know, it needs to be breastfed. The other needs to have a meal cooked for them. They need to go to daycare versus preschool or school and all this. That it turns out that you can't just sort of double up and everybody can do the same thing. It turns out to be a lot more work for everybody involved. And that's just sort of putting that myth to bed. There are no economies of scale. You can't assume that what you've learned from the first one even applies to the second one. I don't know about your kids. My kids are so different in terms of what works and how you discipline them or how you talk to them that you have to kind of, you know, you relearn how to, work the educational model all over with the second one.
Well, we ruined both of ours because we treated them like they were the same age, even though they're 10 and a half months
really?
Apart.
Oh, but
Charlie came and then Rye came within the year.
Yeah.
So we treated Rye like he was the same age as Charlie.
There you go.
That's the problem. Our study comes out of Denmark, says that if you have one child, you're happy. Second child, you're less happy.
Wow.
Third child, you're even more miserable. It affects the mom. Has no effect on the dad.
Yes. No, I know. The bad thing is that our societies are still structured so that dads are not kind of expected to be able to leave work at the drop of a hat to go pick up a kid who's sick at school. So it puts the pressure on the moms to do that. And what moms do with second child, sometimes moms decide, I'm going to stay home. I'm going to take a break out of my career to raise the first child. But when the second child comes on, they say, instead of taking a 1 or 2 year break, you end up taking like a decade long break. Right. And then you're really screwed. So it adds to the women's stress level much more than the men's just because of the structure of society. And guess where, John, things are better? In the Nordic countries, of course, in Sweden and Denmark and Norway, because they have governmental services that allow for parental leave. And if you allow for that, then lowers the stress level.
Right.
And that's all to the good. And this idea that, well, your older child can take care of your younger child. No, parents need to be parents to both children. And as they get older, your responsibilities change. You don't change their diapers, but you still have to worry about them as much as you worried about them as infants. So it never gets any easier.
But don't you see the families that, like, they have one, then they have two, then they have a third. And then at that point, it's like Katie bar the door, they have four, five. And we talk to people that have got like four or five kids.
That's
and they
say
at a certain point, it's just like, oh, it's just mayhem and chaos.
Yeah.
So, in fact, they named their last two kids mayhem and chaos. Because they just think, well, things were out of hand when the third.
Yeah.
So by the time the fourth came along, at that point, we kind of gave up.
Yeah.
And just like rabbits and then just having kids.
I had a friend who was when I was in grade school, who was a family of 11. And I said, oh, my God, you guys, I loved going over to their house. He says he would never do that. He says, that's too many kids. You cannot really, you don't have enough time, you know, alone time with your parents
right.
when you have that many kids. And he thought there should be, now, I grew up with four then five in our family. And I think that seems like ideal. But now, I mean, I have two, everybody I know seems to have two kids, three at the outs, you know, sort
at
of
the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Washes, I grew up, my best friend, Brendan Wash, 18 kids.
Oh, my God.
And his mom had had three miscarriages. So she had 22. She was pregnant for the first 22 years of their marriage with 18 kids.
Catholic?
And what happened was is that, like, Brendan would end up raising Lexi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Danny raised Bucky.
Yeah.
So each kid was almost assigned a sibling that was 10 years younger than them.
You know, what's interesting is, so I grew up with three brothers most of my childhood. But then when I was 12, we had a fifth, kid. My parents, and in effect, I think Bob was raised by his four older brothers. We were like uncles to him because we were so much older, you know, like a decade older. And Bob turned out, you know, the best of all of us. So who knows?
Yeah, I don't know if it each one of the Walshes, most of them, the last time I talked to Danny or to Maddie, they've all turned out really well. The father ran it like an army. Like on Sundays, if you spent the night there on a Saturday night, like I spend the night all the time, sleepovers, right? Mr. Walsh would come in at 6 in the morning and wake you up, and now you had to go do paper route with everybody else. They had a great big station wagon with the fake wood paneling on the side. And he would drop you off, and he'd give you 25 papers, and you were just part of the army at that point. The machinery of it. Then you'd come back, and he would make these things called bullets, which were poached eggs, and everybody had one. And if you left your bread on your plate and didn't eat it right away, someone would reach over and take it. It was crazy to be in that house and to have a gigantic long table, almost like a cafeteria table.
Yeah.
And they had a big, huge milk dispenser that held like 5 gallons or 10 gallons of milk. And some kid, Brian Foster, ran into the house one day and he went to get himself some milk. And as he pushed up on this big contraption like you'd see at a restaurant, it locked in place. He panicked, couldn't get it to stop, and he ran out of the kitchen and allowed like 5 or 10 gallons of milk to just flood the floor. So, of course, Mr. Walsh called the army in. That's every other kid, all 10 or 15 of us, and clean up the entire kitchen. And one of the Walshes ended up going to the Olympics or almost making the Olympics as a swimmer. Another one is a famous, world-famous artist living in New York City. That's Danny Walsh.
Yeah.
Matty Walsh sold insurance. He was a disciplined man, Mr. Walsh.
Yeah.
And
I think there was a book and a movie, Cheaper by the Dozen, where you have a dozen kids and they're like, they're automated. Like all the kids learn to do things.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, you have a dozen people doing it. You can it can work well. I don't know psychologically how they're doing, but it sounds like they were efficient. It sounds like the corporal in Sound of Music, the captain.
Yeah, same thing with the whistle.
And everybody shows up and
off they go.
In line.
Mr. Walsh was such a disciplined individual that he was in bed every night at 9 o'clock. No matter where he was, if he was in the middle of a dance, because he loved to dance, he would stop the dance, walk off, and Mrs. Walsh could come with him. Now, apparently she did spend a lot of time in bed with him, but at 9 o'clock, he was in bed every single night. He lived a very disciplined life. We'll take a quick break. You got your letters pouring in. Come on in, everybody. We'd love to hear from you. Online Trading Academy, 98973, or you can always get to us at MyNorthWest.com. Care Partner Senior Living. Care Partner Senior Living is proud to bring to you these letters that are coming in. I was reading more about Care Partners, and they do a really, really great job of being able to have lots of different places and different sort of living structures for those that have decided that they'd like to be able to, you know, they don't want to live at home anymore. And they look at Care Partners Senior Living, and they do a really great job. Great to have them on board with the Tom McCurley Show. Thanks a lot for doing that. Here comes the mailman.
I'm the mailman, as you can see, I'm the mailman, don't nobody mess with me, I'm the mailman, if you didn't know, I'm the mailman, I bring the mail to your door.
Yes, he does, right to her door. There's a teeny tiny lady, there she is.
Hello!
Hello to you too. She didn't tell us about that letter of the day, but let's get started now, Tom.
Well, we'll start off with the scintillating Jay Inslee State of the State address. What do you say, John?
Yes.
Darren in Falls City weighs in. With Uncle Jay's budget-busting traveling of late, I'm curious how he's been getting around the country. Finally, the state of Washington has a Bigfoot sighting, as in Uncle Jay's carbon footprint.
206, Inslee's trying to become rich like Al Gore. He's actually somewhat smart getting his cash.
253, we may be emitting less CO2 emissions per person since 1950, but how many more people inhabit the planet present day than back then?
Yeah. Social Security, 425. All this doom and gloom over Social Security is ridiculous. All it takes is raising the cap currently in place to $150,000. It's ridiculous that I pay into Social Security the same amount that high-income earners like Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos or John Curley pay.
The idea is they wanted to make it fair, though, so they figured what you put in, you get out, if that happens. On human composting, 360 says, we can't use human waste for fertilizer, but we're going to use whole humans?
Sure. 360 says, hey, Tom, what's Beethoven doing in his grave?
Decomposing. 425. So what is the purpose of composting your body when fire, i.e. cremation, does the exact same thing? No element ever truly disappears on this planet. It may change form, but it's still there.
Marsha in Port Orchard, if my son composts me, I am going to come back and haunt him. I have a life insurance policy to pay for a traditional burial.
And Ray in Ritzville, hey, when I die, I want chia seeds spread all over me. And that way, I'd be somebody's chia pet.
Teachers and Guns 206 says, give teachers guns so they can sell them to buy teaching supplies.
And 253, the Yakima School District has armed teachers.
That's right. Brexit 253, British government meeting sounds like a movie. Ha ha ha.
And a 425, sounds like Monty Python. No matter what you do, it just sounds like Monty Python.
We are trained to think that. 206, you thought American government was dramatic.
And Nick from Orcas, the only thing that could possibly make British Parliament more entertaining would be adding Mike Leach to the mix and have your producer Jacob laughing in the background.
Uh-huh. And then a listener has requested a drop. This is something we've been doing now more often. 206 says, please cut that clip where Tom said,
yeah, I'm hopped up on you, John. Yeah. Okay. On Gillibrand 2020, 253.
I still like this one.
I own a lot of underwear.
Somebody wrote me last night and said, what does that mean? I said, I don't know. Why did you feel the need to throw that in there?
Because you were saying that on the cruise you only brought two. And I said, well, yeah. The context was that I never have that problem because I have plenty of it.
Oh.
I own a lot of underwear.
Okay, here we go.
And 253 on Gillibrand 2020. Uh-huh. Gillibrand, one of the leaders of the Remove Al Franken Silliness. For that reason alone, this proud Democrat will not support her in any fashion.
206. John, thanks for bringing up the young mom thing. Totally bugged me. 52 is not a young mom.
Yeah, does she mean like her kids were younger or something?
I don't know. Her kids.
Anyway, 37. She's still raising kids, I guess, is what she means. But yeah, you're right. And Parenting 206. I will say that once you go from a man-to-man to a zone defense, you're completely screwed. It's about parenting. However, I cannot agree with saying that the second child is not easier, as once you realize that, it's harder to kill them than you think. Things get way better. Second kid, Binky, falls on the floor, dust it off, put back in. First kid, oil the thing or buy a new one.
There you go. 425. Guys, I have six kids. Someone told me a long time ago that when we were expecting our second child, one is one and two are 10. Never more true.
Wow.
But we found out after three, it's like an assembly line.
Yeah, there you go. And robots in hotels and grocery stores, 206. The one thing nobody talks about as we rush toward AI is the cost of keeping technology current. With how fast technology is evolving, it's going to cost a fortune to keep up with the changes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
253, hey, gentlemen. My cousin is a sculptor who makes dental implants. For 20 years, he's been complaining that he's not appreciated at work and his pay does not match his skill. My employer recently informed him that he was being replaced by a robot. My reaction, well, that makes sense.
On Daylight Saving Time, 206, how about the argument on Daylight Savings Time of having kids in the dark during the wintertime waiting for their school bus on the corner? Why doesn't anybody ever talk about that? I'm glad they switched the clocks.
Yeah, they are. Teeny tiny lady.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Comes from Karen in Snowhome.
Huh.
I thought Sully was going to come on when you started playing Sweet Cherry Pie.
Sorry.
I'm not sure what was more disappointing, not hearing my buddy Sully or realizing that his walk-on tune is stripper music.
Sorry, Karen. Karen has never been in there. What's that? That's a classic.
Exactly.
Sorry, well, Karen knows. All right.
And now you know.
Out of time. Bye-bye.